But when we come to chapter 4, he talks about being caught up. John says that he's caught up in the Spirit into heaven, and that he sees God showing him what's going to happen in the future. And it goes all the way down to the end of this world and a new heaven and a new earth. And this is what we're looking at in chapters 4 to, well, I should put it this way, 22, the very last chapter. So everything, and so where we are in chapter 6 is along here a little ways, and we're looking at the judgments that God is going to pour out on this wicked world. So this is what Jesus, what John had seen. This is was, and this is, and this is to come. And so we have past tense, present tense, future tense. We have what John had seen, what was going on in John's time and in our time, and this is future. And we see this as what is coming. So when we get into chapter 6 here, and if you look at the top of your notes, just to do a quick summary, in this chapter we see a book that has seven seals. And the books in Bible times were not so much a book that had a binding on it, like our songbook or like our Bible, more like a scroll. And if you rolled up a piece of parchment, a piece of leather, and you rolled it up like this, and you wrapped ribbons around it, or pieces of leather, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and in chapter 5, this book is given, the Lord Jesus takes this book out of the hand of God the Father, sitting on the throne, and in chapter 6, he begins to open the seals, take off the ribbons or the bindings, and every one he takes off brings a judgment. And so we're up to the sixth judgment, and it is the most severe of the six, and it's where we see a great earthquake, and that's in verse 12. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. How many of you have ever been in an earthquake? When you were in New Zealand, you've been in an earthquake? The closest. Have you been in one? New Guinea? Well, there were some up there. The closest I was ever in one was just a little tremor in Melbourne way back in the 70s. And we thought it was a sonic boom, like a jet had gone over. But it was just a little tremor. There was one this week, 2.2 in Melbourne. We didn't hear anything about it because it didn't have virus connected to that piece of news, you know, so they don't talk about it. But there have been some really severe ones recently. There was a 7.8 not long ago. And I think the largest one that's on record was 8 point something or possibly 9 point something. But this one is called a great earthquake. In fact, did you notice there the bottom one in verse in chapter 16 and verse 18 at the bottom of the front page, where it talks about so mighty an earthquake and so great. It says there was a great earthquake such as was not since men were upon the earth. So mighty an earthquake. So who among us today is a geologist or a seismologist and you understand all about earthquakes and you'd be willing to come up here and explain it to us? Does anybody? Why, you probably know more than the rest of us. We understand from what we read and what geologists tell us and seismologists that it looks like the earth, the surface of the earth, is plates of stone, dirt and stone that rest on top of a relatively liquid core or underneath the rock, underneath the plates, tectonic plates, and that these plates move. And as they move along each other, they don't move smoothly. They move jerking, and as they jerk, that's where we get our earthquakes from. And sometimes it's not just a matter of them going slip, slip, slip like this bang, bang, bang. Sometimes one will go under another and lift it up, and this one goes down. And under the sea, this is often where our tsunamis come from, because if one goes under here and this one is lifted up, then the seawater that's on top can be made into a wave, and it can be a frightening sort of a situation where they move really fast. It's surprising how quick they move. They tell us that the most dangerous situation in the ocean is in the Canary Islands, where there's a tall mountain, and it is in an active area where it's possible to have an earthquake that shakes sufficiently that the whole slope of a mountain, this mountain in the Canary Islands, which is, what, just off the Straits of Gibraltar, I brought along a globe here, and over here, that in this area here, where's the Canaries? Here it is. So you see Africa here, and you see Europe here. Well, Canaries are here, and the thought that was put out some years ago was that if this mountain slope were to slide with all its mass and weight into the ocean suddenly, it would create a tsunami that would cover Florida. Florida is only 100 meters above sea level at the highest point. The highest hill in Florida is 300 feet. And they reckon that a tsunami, is it true that they can travel at 600 miles an hour? Is that right? That would take quite a few hours to get across there, and you'd think everybody ought to get out of Florida. But that's frightening, isn't it? Who of you can help us? I'm sure Wayne knows about the rift. What can you tell us about the rift? Okay. You know more than that. Well, all right, I'll tell you what I know, and then would you help me? Would you all add to this? Up here, in off the... Okay, let's go up to Israel here. If you go to the Sea of Galilee and run down the Jordan River to the Dead Sea, and from there down into the... I'm going to say, is it into the Red Sea, and then across the east coast of Africa, Ethiopia, and where?
Uganda.
All right, down through there, and then off the east coast of Africa, there is a fault line there that they call the Rift, and it's active. It's a dangerous situation, and that's one of the fault lines. Most people are not aware that there is a fault line that runs up through the Atlantic as well as a fault line. There are fault lines all around the Pacific. We have the Ring of Fire, and there are these here, and New Zealand's included, and all over here into Asia. We have very little activity in Australia itself, but over the north and up into Asia. What was that, Banda Aceh? Was that the one some years ago where there was that tsunami that originated there and swept across the Indian Ocean? So there are these fault lines all over the place that are potential dynamite. Yellowstone National Park in the States, I believe it's Yellowstone, that has an enormous volcanic chamber beneath that they keep noticing the swelling of the earth there and the changes that are happening there. And they say, if this one ever lets go, it can cover most of the United States with ash, with volcanic ash. And so there are some of these situations that are like a keg of dynamite with a fuse lit that we would not be at all surprised at any moment to hear there's been a 10.4 earthquake anywhere in the world. And the Lord talks about this as being one of his judgments upon the world, that he will send a judgment that men cannot counter. There's no defense. What kind of defense can you have? You can build stronger buildings or buildings that move with an earthquake. But this is what we see here. And then I want to call your attention. I turn the page to the back of your notes there. Call your attention to this. Henry Morris, one of the creation science men that we have a lot of respect for, wrote in his book, The Revelation Record, that the Lord Jesus predicted these things, these earthquakes and all like this, even before his crucifixion. Let's take our Bibles and look in Matthew 24, and we'll go and look at these passages of Scripture. And if you have some insights, you know some things that you can help us to shed light on these, then hold your hand up and let me know, and we'll stop and talk about those. In Matthew 24 and verse 7, we believe the Lord is describing, of course, it's the general course of events in history, but it also describes so clearly what we call the tribulation, because there is a period of time here where we call it the tribulation, and that's what we're looking at in Revelation 6. But Matthew 24 and verse 7, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences," those are diseases, "and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows." Then look at Mark chapter 13. Matthew, Mark, and Luke record much the same, but there are little differences that add to what we know. Mark chapter 13 and verse 8, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be earthquakes in divers places, and there shall be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows." I take it that phrase, "the beginning of sorrows," is talking about early in the tribulation, early in that time of trouble. And then in Luke 21 and verse 11, we have here Luke, the historian's record of this, "And great earthquakes shall be in divers places, and famines and pestilences, and fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven." So these are all descriptive of these events and in the Revelation, we believe. Now, certainly these things have happened previously. Some of these things have happened. And then let's go to the Old Testament. This may not be quite as easy for you to find unless you're really familiar with the Bible, but Joel. You have the major prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, and Ezekiel. And then you have Daniel, Hosea, Joel. And so in Joel chapter 2 and verses 30 and 31, there, Hosea, Joel, chapter 2 and verses 30 and 31. And the Lord says here to Joel, "And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and the terrible day of the Lord come." That phrase, "the day of the Lord," is descriptive of what happens from the rapture of the saints, when the Lord takes all of those who belong to Him, that period of time, all the way to the new heaven and the new earth. We know of 1,007 years that are included in that, and that large period of time is often in the scripture called the day of the Lord. This is when God is going to step into history openly, obviously, visibly, to an extent that we have probably never seen, or at least for that length of time. And then if we go from Joel chapter 2, we want to look also at Zephaniah. So we're going further on: Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Habakkuk, Zephaniah. We're almost to Malachi. We're getting close there. And in Zephaniah chapter 1 and verse 15, it's interesting, isn't it? The Old Testament agrees with the New. The New agrees with the Old. And here, we might start with verse 14. In verse 14, it says, "The great day of the Lord is near," it is near, "and hasteth greatly, even the voice of the day of the Lord. The mighty man shall cry there bitterly. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness." So we feel that that agrees with what we've read in Matthew and Mark and Luke and in Joel. And then look in Isaiah. This is easier for us to find, Isaiah chapter 3. And here we find the Lord speaking to Isaiah about these things. Isaiah 3 and verse 9. No, it's Isaiah 13, not 3. Isaiah 13 and verses 9 and 10. Isaiah 13, verses 9 and 10. "Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine." We could go on to read verse 14, "And I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible." So these are frightening words. I remember when I was a boy and I would hear someone preach about prophecy, I had no doubt that this is really true. It hasn't happened yet, but God always keeps his word and everything he says is true. And it caused my heart to tremble. In fact, I really believe the Lord uses truth about future events to cause us to really pull a handbrake on and have a look. Where am I with the Lord? If the Lord comes today, am I ready? I wasn't ready. When I was a teenager, I was wild and woolly, and the Lord really convicted my heart. But I was not ready to meet the Lord. Oh my, if he comes today, I'm sunk. I'm gone. And it really caused my heart to tremble. Then I made the mistake, like a lot of people do. I thought, I'll just reform. I'll just be a good boy. And you know, you cannot do that without the Lord in your heart. You cannot change your life. Can the leopard change his spots? Can the Ethiopian change his skin? No. And I couldn't change my heart. And it was frustrating because I thought, I'll be a good boy, but I couldn't do it. And there were sins that I knew were sins that I couldn't stop doing. And the Lord really convicted my heart that I was in a terrible state. And it was what eventually brought me to surrender to the Lord and ask him to change my heart. And he made a start on it. It's still going on. I have a little tie pin I made. It's an L plate. Can you see my L plate? I would like every Christian to have one of these. Every lady needs a brooch and every man needs a tie pin. Or something that says L plate. It doesn't stand for lunatic. It doesn't stand for liar. It stands for learner. Because we're all still in kindergarten, aren't we, with the Lord. But learning and letting the Lord work in our lives. So here we have this. I want to just pause a minute and talk about this. And then I want you to talk to us. I think we've got time this morning. I hope we do. Those of you who love to read about Noah's flood, have you ever noticed in Genesis chapter 6, it says the fountains of the deep were broken up, and it says that before it talks about the rain. Did you ever notice that? I read it incorrectly for years, and I just skipped over the part about the fountains of the great deep being broken up. I just started looking at the rain. Rain 40 days, 40 nights without stopping, great flood upon the earth. But geologists and seismologists tell us that this ring of fire around the Pacific is matched by what you could almost call a zipper that is a mountain range that runs up through the Atlantic like this. And there are places where at great depth it is still open and there is visible magma, glowing magma, but it's under such pressure there with water pressure, such weight of water on it, that it can't make enormous eruptions and such like that. But it does appear that in the past, and I think these fellows are on track when they say that this is probably where the fountains of the great deep broke up in the Pacific and in the Atlantic. And when they broke up, that the breaking up, possibly that the surface of the earth, which is now covered by thousands of feet of water in those places, was nearer the surface, and that it spewed out superheated steam into the upper atmosphere. And we read about the waters above the firmament and the waters below the firmament. And some of these Christian men believe that what happened was that spewing out of the superheated gases and magma and lava and everything else like this caused the waters above the firmament to condense and fall upon the earth. And that's where the 40 days and 40 nights of rain came from. But the enormous effect. I was looking at a video the other day that some of the creation science fellows had put out. It was very interesting. And they were saying that what was unpopular 40, 50 years ago when I first read about this was that in all likelihood that at creation the entire continents of the world were one landmass. Some people now call it Pangaea, one whole continent. And that at this point in Genesis chapter 6, chapter 7, where it talks about this, that at this point it began to separate, and very quickly there was continental drift and the continents were separated. And you can even see some places where you can understand how that Africa and South America could fit together like pieces of a puzzle. And there are some places like that that makes you think quite possibly this is the case. It may be even where the legend about Atlantis comes from, that it was destroyed in a day and such like that. And so it makes us think about how serious it is for there to be a great earthquake that affects the sun and the moon and the sky and all this. So what thoughts do you have? I'll stop here and let you talk to me a bit about it. What have you got any light? Anybody got any enlightenment on this? Anybody done a research paper on this? Any doctors of seismology or anything here today? Any light? Come on, Mr. School Teacher.
Wait. At the end of the day, I know the Bible talks about the sea going so far and then
over. Yes. Yep.
So it's not like the resort joint and then it's opened up, just opened up, there'd be just magma inside. So it's more likely that the water came from the earth and it filled up until the point where it forms the, you know, what we see and how we see. I mean, if the sea dropped down by 100 meters or whatever the case is, the shape of the land that you could see would be very different.
That's right. Land bridges.
Mm.
That's right.
So I think it depends on the level, but I mean, we do know that God has put everything in place. And that when it happens, when God moves things, I find Revelation is interesting because the people in who crying out for the
yes.
fall on them, they're not recognizing it as just an earthquake.
Yes.
They're recognizing it somehow that this is God's judgment.
That's right. That is so right. Yep. In connection with this, I guess all of you have read at one time or another that if the land over the earth was leveled out, sea basins, mountaintops leveled out, that there's about 2 miles of water that would cover the entire earth. There's enough water on the earth at present that if it was all leveled out to a round ball, there would be 2 miles of water on everything. So we can understand there's plenty of water for a worldwide flood. There's no question about that. And we agree with Wayne that we cannot interpret what the world was like before the flood by what we see today. We just don't know. We expect there were land bridges that people from Asia came to Australia long before Tasman or any of the others, Van Diemen or any of the others ever sailed the shores of Australia. And so there's a lot of changes, and here's one of them right here where there's an enormous earthquake. Let's look quickly through this, and we'll come back and talk about this some more. In Revelation 6, if you don't mind coming back there, in Revelation 6, we see here that it appears that there's an effect on the sky. Because in verse 12, where we have the great earthquake, it says the sun became black as sackcloth of hair. What was the volcano in Indonesia that went off 150 years ago? Krakatoa, was that what it was? They said that there was a period of winter over the whole earth for like a year and a half because of the dust that was in the sky. And we have seen times here in North Queensland, and you've seen it different places, where in time of bushfires, Les, you remember when we lived in Rockhampton, and about 3 o'clock in the afternoon in August or so, the sun would turn red in the sky and disappear because the smoke was so thick in the air. So here we have the sun, black as sackcloth, that was goat's hair, black goat's hair, and the moon became his blood. And that's really interesting that the sun is more eclipsed than the moon is. And the moon becomes red. The sun becomes black. The moon becomes red. And then we read, and the stars of heaven. Now, this is not speaking of Canopus and Betelgeuse and all the others, Orion and all that. It's not talking about that. It's talking about heavenly bodies, which could be meteorites or asteroids or comets or any of those things like that, that they fall unto the earth. We have a lot of talk going on at present about the danger of asteroids and how much harm they could do if an asteroid hit the Earth. They're quite large. Some of them can be quite large.
We call them fallen
stars when we see them. Yep. We used to. Yep. Did any of you, when you were kids in the summertime, did you like to sleep out in the backyard, throw a tarp on the ground or something, and sleep out in the backyard and watch for watch for meteorites, watch for falling stars. It was amazing, wasn't it, to see those? And during the time when there were meteor showers, it was really something. So this is what's described here, but it's exceptional. It's a lot. The stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she's shaken of a mighty wind. That's exceptional. That's a lot. We haven't seen anything like that I can remember. And then when it describes the heaven departing as a scroll, in the scriptures, there is a reference where Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He talks about the third heaven. And we take the third heaven to be the dwelling place of God. But there's a second heaven. That's the starry heaven. That's the starry skies we see. And there's a first heaven that's the atmospheric heaven. That's the firmament that the Lord built or designed and created in Genesis chapter 1. And I'm going to suggest to you that we know that the heaven of God is not going to be shaken by an earthquake here on the earth. His heaven cannot be shaken. And we know that the starry heavens can be shaken, and we have stars falling out of the sky here. And yet later on, there's reference to stars or heavenly bodies falling. So this is not completely obliterated, though there are stars or meteors, asteroids falling. But I'm thinking here when it talks about the heaven departing as a scroll rolled together in verse number 14 is probably describing something that happens to the atmospheric heaven. And I don't know what it is. I've got several books on the Revelation, the commentaries, and so I go and look at those. And you know what all of the commentators say? They all say, we know nothing. They all say, we don't understand. It does. Well, we can't breathe without it. Did you know that the atmosphere, you know how thin the atmosphere is? Everybody knows how thin the atmosphere is. We only have to travel, if we were to travel horizontally, the distance that you can travel vertically, and then you'll have difficulty breathing, you won't get halfway to Acidon before you run short of air. In fact, we're only traveling about 15,000 feet, 14,000, 15,000 feet before you begin to run out of air and you have difficulty breathing without oxygen. We were flying to Mexico with Brother Hawk one time in a private plane. And he told me, I was in one plane with one of our girls, and Susan was in a friend's plane with their girls, and we were flying, and he said, we're going to have problems. There's a cold front coming through. And cold fronts, because the air is colder and denser, it's down close to the ground, and it runs along the ground like a wedge. It doesn't run along the ground like this. It runs along like a wedge. And he said, we are going to have problems because the cold front, Joy might even remember this, when we were flying with Brother Hawk, We're flying along like this, and this cold front is coming, and he said, we're going to have troubles because it's going to have updrafts with it, and it's going to push us up over 15,000 feet. And I knew that's where you needed oxygen. He didn't have oxygen on the plane. So we were flying along, and we could see clouds of dust in the air. He said, here it comes. So he trimmed the nose down on the plane, pushed the yoke forward so we could descend, and we went like this. We went up over 15,000 feet. I don't know if Joy was in the back seat or Joanna was in the back seat, but they went just like this, just went to sleep. And Bob and I had good enough oxygen in our lungs that we were okay. And we got over the top of this thing and descended again. And Larry Sexton said that Susan and the other girls went to sleep as well, but he was okay. But you know what? There's not much air. There's not much atmosphere. It just doesn't go very far. In fact, by the time you travel from here to Tolga, you're out of air. That's 100,000 feet, and the highest planes that ever flew can't go much over that. And so, you know, if the Lord makes some alteration in the atmosphere, whether he thins it down, lowers the breathable amount, or what, changes. They tell us that if you were to fly in the Concorde, that the sky turns black. The sky is beginning to turn black above you. You're toward the top of the atmosphere. What happens? Anybody got a suggestion for us? Any of you folks are atmosphere specialists? Well, I don't know. Henry Morris says in his commentary, he says, I wonder if all the dust in the air is rolled back like a scroll. Who knows what the morning glory is over in the Gulf of Carpentaria? Do you know about that? Cam, come on, you need to know about that. There is a cloud formation in the Gulf of Carpentaria that at one time of the year actually rolls like a cloud formation, and I can't remember if it's coming onto the coast or if it's going off the coast there, but they take video footage of it, and it's a rolling cloud formation. Is the Lord going to do something like that? I don't know. But it's the sky, I think it's the atmospheric heaven that is rolled together like a scroll. Heaven departs like a scroll rolled together. And then the other effect is mountains and islands moved out of their places. Wow, Australia's an island. Mountains and islands moved out of their places. That is really strong. Now, we've only got 5 minutes left, so we're going to come back and look at the effect on men next week. So we got a couple of minutes to talk about these things. Who can give us any light, or raise a question if you want to? If we don't have the answers, we'll see if we can find out.